Joining me right now is somebody who is doing something else.
And that, of course, is our correspondent at Maine State Prison, Dean Brown. Dean.
Howdy. I'm working with the NAACP branch in here, in the long-timers group and the Maine JCs. I want to bring an update each week, you know, of what these different groups are working on. There's a lot of community-based action going on. Like the NAACP has a program called Family Ties, a program they're working on where prisoners can, like for $10, they can make a video to their children. We didn't read a story in front of the video camera that the mother could play for the child, things like that. Trying to get moved towards a more friendly atmosphere in the, or more familial oriented atmosphere in the visiting room. For people who are visiting their children, you know, they get a long distance dads program, things like that. These groups are working on with the administration. The administration's been cooperative to some extent.
What do you mean by a more familial atmosphere during the visits?
Well, to be able to sit more like in a group and hold your child and you know, to try to function as a family in a way during the visit. Instead of so institutionalized, you got to be in this table with your hands on this, and this is your chair, and you can't move, and blah, blah, blah. All the paranoia.
Very security conscious the whole time.
If you get caught smoking a cigarette, or if they go in your cell where you and another man live and they find a cigarette, don't matter which one of you it belonged to, you both lose your visits for a year.
A year for a cigarette?
Yeah, you can only have non-contact visits after that. Yeah, or drugs. It's their approach to fighting the drug problem. But, you know, they fire guards and take them to court for bringing the stuff in. But they don't take your visit for having it, you know.
No, they don't, like, take their pay away for a year. Or don't take...
That'd be funny. Yeah, well, they could put them in jail. There's one man going to jail for 3 years, I think. Greenlaw or Greenleaf or something like that, who got busted not too long ago bringing in heroin. He got told on and set up, and boom, down the tubes he went.
Well, he certainly knew what he was getting into.
There's no pity. I'm the guy, you know, you're
but it
that.
Seems to me that cigarettes, I mean, I quit smoking back in February after 30 years of enjoying the heck out of most of them, you know. and it just seems an insane thing to have that stiff a penalty for good old tobacco.
Yeah, it's asinine, really, especially if it had nothing to do with the visiting room. But then again, you know, how best to assure a prisoner coming back to prison? I mean, there's no penologic objective in it. The only thing that happens, these people are going crazy with the fines now, having fun with that. You know, they're imposing fines on people with money and people that don't have money. And, you know, it doesn't matter. They'll take what they can get, and then they take the money they get, and they go off and they pay someone like the University of Maine School of Law and say, hey, it's money, promises that you won't help a prisoner file a lawsuit against our corruption. You know, oh, that sounds like a deal, and sign away they do. You know. It's unconscionable. I mean, we can petition the legislature. There's a provision every Wednesday in the major newspapers. They put the notice of public hearing where these state agencies, rulemaking and stuff like that, have to have a public hearing. It also explains that if you have a problem with a public rule or a state agency rule, or if you're adversely affected by it, that there are provisions for you to get it reviewed by the legislature, et cetera, et cetera. I'm trying to motivate some prisoners here to pursue that avenue. Of course, the administration says you need their permission to, you know, try to protest or gather signatures or anything like that. So they can say no and then write you up for violating the rules when you do what's perfectly legal to do. But we need to get in front of the legislature and have this reviewed. I mean, there's a huge disparity in the good time credits. Where if they take 10 days worth of good time from me and 10 days from another guy, it's going to take another guy 5 months to earn it. And then another thing is the grid score system that's statutorily in place. If your classification grid score is below a certain level, you can go to minimum security or whatever, you know, like a farm or whatever. And here they look at the length of time you got, and that's the only consideration they give. They ignore the law. There are several of us who have a long time in, have a long time remaining, who would qualify under the provisions of the law to be incarcerated in, say, the Bulldog Correctional Facility down the road from me at the farm is minimum security. Under the good time law that I'm sentenced under, I can earn 5 days a month, but they're only letting me earn three because I'm here. If I have to be in the farm or another minimum security facility in order to be able to earn those extra 2 days a month, well, I can't do it because of the
amount. You think it'd be the reverse? I mean, there's a huge incentive to get to, I presume, to being able to work over at the farm.
Exactly.
And having gotten there is a huge part of the reward itself. And then,
uniquely in Maine, the law allows for prisoners to be in a minimum security facility regardless of how much time they are, as long as they fit the classification grid level. This mm-hmm. man here, Rick Barrett, he's a local boy, Waldeboro, I think. He's been fighting the administration for quite some time on this issue because his classification score is such that he would be allowed to be in a minimum security facility and earn those extra 2 days of good time, and they're not allowing him to do it because of their own internal rule. They're saying you have too much time remaining, but that's not a legitimate criterion. It is a consideration in determining the overall score, the amount of time you have on your sentence that you serve, mm-hmm. the amount of time you're serving, and then, you know, what you got left is a factor. But there are other factors as well, including your institutional record, what self-help programs you've taken, what your education level is, your escape history, et cetera. But if you reach that, now that last package of legislation they passed, they tried to, for the Department of Corrections, they tried to sneak in a little piece that says, you know, they can keep certain information private, and that's exactly what they want to keep private, because prisoners getting a hold of their classification score can say, listen, I'm entitled to this because this is my score. And they say, well, we're not going to let you know what your score is, then you can't tell us what you're entitled to and you can't fight for it. So they're trying to stop us from even being able to get it under the Freedom of Information Act, which is it's as corrupt as you can get. I mean, and naturally the legislature, you know, in bed with the Department of Corrections and all them bigwigs, put the screws to the taxpayer, put the screws to the prisoner, their families, anybody. They don't care as long as they're getting their tax dollars. It's madness. It's kind of hard to breed respect for and obedience to the norms of society when you see right in the face of what they're doing, you know, that they're trying to breed hatred and contempt. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. You know, they make you know you're down and you're going to stay down. Now they're hitting people with these damn fines. You know, people that have no money, they're going to violate your probation because you didn't pay the fine. They went to the legislature to get this bill passed so that they can collect unpaid fines. They made it sound like they were going to collect the unpaid fines owed to the public, which they're going to do. But they didn't tell the public, we're only interested in this now because we just gave ourselves permission to impose fines, and we have no way of collecting them unless you pass this law. So
my
they passed
gosh.
The law, and now they can just take the money off your books. If the money comes in, boom, they just take it. They don't need to go to court and get it like anybody else on the streets would have to.
So would this be addressed through regulatory change or legislative change?
The Administrative Procedures Act is the rule that they went under state agency rules to make it a rule to be able to impose the fine. The House legislation, I believe it passed, was in the last session, gave them the authority to implement the phone system that they're going with and to collect fines. You know, if part of your sentence was to pay, say, $100 fine, the only way the Department of Corrections could take any money out of your account is with a court order, if the court ordered them to take it. Now, ordinarily, when you get released from prison, you go on probation or whatever, you would be required as a condition of probation to pay your fines. And if you didn't, they could violate your probation for that. So the Department of Corrections wasn't content with that. They want to be able to just take the money off your books.
Mm.
It's not so much anything to do with anybody else's fines except what's due to them. But they used an exploited the, you know, the nobleness, I guess you'd say, of doing society a favor. Oh, we'll collect that money for you. Yeah, now you're interested because there's money in it for you.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's kind of hard to look at that kind of system with any kind of respect when all you see is another hustle, another scheme.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And then they stick it to you with the prices and the vending machines and the cost of, you know, making a phone call to a loved one. People can't afford that, especially the families of criminals. In most cases, they're not that wealthy, you know. We didn't come from the that side of the track, so...
So each of these things sort of happens one by one, and it adds on increment by increment, huh?
And it's, you know, I was looking at what the Inmate Benefit Fund, which is a fund generated by the extra money they make from the telephones, the profits from the canteen, and, you know, everything that they make money off the prisoners through. That money goes into the Inmate Benefit Fund. Supposedly, you know, well, geez, we need cards or some checkers or whatever, or, you know, a jungle gym or whatever they're going to buy. They're buying buildings and furniture and bulletproof vests and ammunition and whatever they can just to, you know, it's a fund and they're causing monies to be deposited in it, and then they're taking that money and you know, just doing what they want with it. I mean, geez, for the haircuts, the barber expenses for MSP for the year was like a couple $1,000s. For Wyndham, it was $14,000. I mean, geez, you got, you know, like half the population down there, half the size of this place, and it's considerably more for barber services. I mean, you'd think they was taking them out to, you know, a high-class salon or something, but the prices that you know, they're getting. But, I mean, it's a hustle. And wherever you look around it, yeah, you see a hustle and a scheme. And if it's not being performed by the inmates, it's being performed by the guards.
And, well, that's why we're doing this show, and soon we hope to have another show on that's completely dedicated to this.
Looking forward to that.
All right. Well, look, you want to wrap up here? If you got any last thing to say, we got to jump out of here. There'll be
things going on. I just touch on last week's discussion with the property officer. As we were talking, he was going off on a barrage against another prisoner, calling him a PC and an out-of-stater and everything. And this guy, Mark Robichaud, he's a transfer up here from Massachusetts, where there's a lot of racial tension, there's a lot of violence. They don't have cable TV. They can't have a CD player. But yet, he wants to go back to that system where white people are the minority, and that's, you know, that can sometimes be a problem. For all its niceties up here, he's had it up to his eyebrows with the corruption and the, you know, the abuse. He just, you know, he wrote you a letter on that. It was returned to him. We put the wrong address on it, but we're trying to get that straightened out.
Okay.
But anyway, it just, you know, it's an ongoing battle. And, you know, we can hope for the best, but I don't really see a heck of a lot changing without a lot of pressure. But I want to thank the RFR listening audience for their time. And
if they want to write you a letter or note, what is the address?
807 Cushing Road, Warren, Maine. 4854.
And
Dean Brown.
Okay, Dean. Well, look forward to talking to you again next week.
Yes, I will call.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
See you.